Thank you, Mr. Bulawski. Good morning, brethren. Good morning, brethren. Happy Sabbath. Well, let's jump right in. So if you would, please join me in Matthew 24. Matthew 24, we know it's a very familiar set of scriptures where the disciples had begun to ask Christ about signs of the end. And then Christ led right into it, giving his direct answers. But if we look, starting in verse 3, we see that very question. The disciples said, "Tell us, when will these things be?" Christ continued on and gave those answers, gave the signs, the wonders that would be seen through verse 7, all the way through verse 7. And we see that they're the evils that are under Satan's direction. Nothing to do with what God is doing. It's the evils that are a culmination of what man has caused under direction of Satan, that they've done to themselves. We'll see religious deception that will eventually bring about a false hope, wars, pestilences, famines. So also, though, when we do look at these prophetic events in Matthew 24, we see that all these signs and wonders correspond with the first four seals of Revelation. And we know them better as the four horsemen that are mentioned in Revelation chapter 6. Now, we know these signs and wonders have been going on for a long time. We've all heard the argument. Well, how can we tell that these signs are what Christ is talking about now? They've been going on for years. And yes, these things have always been around in one way, one form, one fashion or another. But never combined in a way that they are now with a common goal. Deception and control. And whether we believe it or not, these horsemen that are described here in Revelation 6 have been riding for a while, and they're still riding today. And their ride will continue to intensify to the point where society will be on the verge of self-destruction. But Christ said in verse 8 of Matthew 4, let's read that, that all these things are the beginning of sorrows. It's just the beginning of the time of Jacob's trouble, which mentioned back in the Old Testament in Jeremiah 30. But it's just the tip of the iceberg. All this precedes God's intervention. So let's pick up this story in verse 36, and let's continue with it. Matthew 24, verse 36. But of that day and hour no one knows. No. Not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also so will be the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving into marriage, until that day Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. We are living in that time mentioned here in Matthew 24, in the days of Noah. We live in a society that's become numb to crime. And man, I fall guilty to it. How many of us get the updates on our area watching news? Well, there's another murder, there's another robbery, there's something this, that. And we're just like, okay, it's normal. How about homosexuality just being brandished all around us? Does it affect us? We can't have wholesome family time, watching TV, going out in public. Has it come to the point that it doesn't bother us? Are we all a part of a world that is, just better plainly said, is full of lawlessness, the lack of godly moral character? But unlike them, if you look, their life continues on. Society is adapting and moving forward. And if we look back at Noah's time, just as God used his mighty hand in Noah's day to close that ark, he only saved 8 people. But it was the ones that he considered righteous. That door was not left for Noah or any of his sons to make the decisions who was on, what they could do, who was allowed in. It was God only. So it will be in this time of the end. When God chooses who he wants to enter his wedding hall. He will be the one that shuts the door. And it will be who He chooses and who He considers righteous. Like Noah and his family, we too cannot fall prey to our surroundings. Leave mistakes, leave sins unchanged, left unrepented, that will allow us to be led astray and finding ourselves knocking on that door of that wedding hall, only to hear the words, "Depart from me, I never knew you." Words we never want to hear. So we must prepare now and be ready. So I'm going to give you a title. The title of this message is, "As in the Days of Noah, Faithful Living in a Fearful World." As in the days of Noah, faithful living in a fearful world. And I'm going to do this in four parts. This is part one. If you want a subtitle to it, it is Religious Deception. Part one, Religious Deception. And our focus on this message is not on the evils that are around us, but how we are to be called. How are we to be living during this time? And what is meant in Jeremiah 30, how Jacob would be saved out of this. Out of this trouble. And we're going to focus with three points we can use to recognize and endure this religious deception. And we're going to use the example of four young men that we've all cut our teeth on in the Bible, but about their captivity during ancient Babylon. And you probably already guessed it. We're talking about Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, or better known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. So the first point, we'll go ahead and get started. Point one, know your God. Know your God. Daniel chapter 10. Now use the possessive form of that, of your God. Because He's not just a God or the God. He's the God of Israel. He's the same God who has continued to fulfill the promises He gave to Abraham. And He's continued to see His mighty hand in work today. And this book right here is to His people. This is the book of Israel, to spiritual Israel, as a guide to enter this time. And now we're going to jump in Daniel chapter 10. And I know we're jumping ahead in his life, jumping into the visions later on. But it sets the attitude of a desire toward understanding his God. In chapter 10, we know it's the third year of Cyrus, the king of Persia, in verse 1, and they were sitting on the banks of the great river, the Tigris River. So let's read verses 10 through 12. Daniel 10, verses 10 through 12. "Then suddenly a hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. And he said to me, 'O Daniel, man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak to you, and stand upright. For I have now been sent to you.' While he was speaking this word to me, I stood trembling." Verse 12, "Then he said to me, 'Do not fear, Daniel. From the first day that you set your heart to understand and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come because of your words." We see this later in his life. It's even referencing back to his earlier life. Does not give a time, but we can read this and take reading between the lines that Daniel took the time to learn his God, know his God. And we can look and see that when we get to this point, when we know our God, use this example, that we can communicate with him. And this example shows a developed relationship, something we all need. One where we're not only are just known by God, but are recognized by God. The second point, trust your God. Trust your God. Daniel chapter 3. Well, this is a story of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah being led in. We know that Nebuchadnezzar has had a big gold statue built. Verses 4 through 6, he says they were commanded when they seen this statue that they would have to fall down and worship. We know that there was a penalty if you didn't obey. and it would be cast into a fiery furnace. We all know the story. But let's read in verses 16 through 17 and see how these young men handled this situation. I'll just back up to verse 15. Daniel 3, verse 15. Now, if you are ready, at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, the harp, the lyre, and the psaltery, in symphony with all kinds of music, and you fall down and worship the image which I have made good, what Nebuchadnezzar thought was good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from my hands? Verse 16, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us from your hand, O king. These young men showed a very great example. They knew their God. They had a rapport with him. They trusted his judgment on their actions. And notice, they didn't make any reviling accusations against the king, throwing scripture at him, you do this, or we ain't going to do this, we don't care what you do. But rather, they let their knowledge and trust in their God's way speak for itself. And we know the rest of the story, and we know what it ended up with. God was glorified, not the three young men. Which moves us to the last point, point three. Obey your God. Obey your God. Let's move forward to Daniel chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6. Now, knowing or trusting your God is just not enough. Just as these four young men exhibited those first two points of knowing him, trusting what would happen, it takes one more step. Obedience. No matter the consequences, we can look back at that example of the three young men, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. They demonstrated that very point of obedience in verse 18 of chapter 3. But for this obedience, I want to jump ahead and look at Daniel for this last example. So in Daniel chapter 6, we know that Daniel finds himself in a hairy situation. He kind of finds himself with a bullseye on his back. He has the whole administration of the king looking at him, constantly watching him, seeing if they can catch him defying the king. And all this is brought out of jealousy. And even in verse 7 of chapter 6, it states that all the whole kingdom was looking for him, setting a trap. And that trap was no worship or seeking counsel in any other, either God, authority, or anybody else, rather than the king himself. And we know what that is, what would happen if he was caught. The punishment was a horrible death, a death ripped apart by lions. But let's look at Daniel's reaction. And we'll read verses 10 and 11 of chapter 6. Well, verse 9. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. So it was in effect. Daniel knew this. Now, when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, went with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, and as was his custom since early days. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplications before his God. Daniel knew his God's laws. Daniel knew the first commandment. You shall not have any other gods before me. But he chose something. He chose to obey his God and trust him because he knew him. He had a rapport with him. And fear of death did not alter his obedience. And you know, as time progresses, as we read in Matthew 24, with the extremism of this religious deception, like Daniel, we too were going to face persecution. We may face times when we're forced to make these same decisions. And sadly, a lot of this world, a lot of people we know, will be desperately seeking hope and will fall prey to deception and accept the solutions provided by the deceptor. Now, I want to just reference Matthew 10, verses 16 through 23, where Christ reminds us when this time, He reminds us that we will be delivered up. It's not an if, it's when we're going to be delivered. Just like Daniel, we'll be done by those that closest around us, even by our own families. But Christ didn't stop with just gloom and doom there. He gave us some encouraging words. He continued by saying, be strong. Do not fear. Remember the examples of old. They're here for us to learn. For he who endures to the end will be saved. But to endure this, and we look at this and it's coming up, it requires us to know God, know our God, the God, have a relationship, be known by him. Trust in every word that is written in this book, that we can move forward and demonstrate obedience that is required to enter that waiting hall. So in closing, I want to end by reading one final scripture in 1 Peter. 1 Peter 4. And we're going to read verses 12 through 14. 1 Peter 4, verse 12. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you, as though some strange thing has happened to you. Peter's saying, we've been told, we've been warned. Christ told us earlier, it's not when or if, it's when. It's going to happen. Don't be surprised. Be prepared. Verse 13, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. Verse 14, if you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, for the Spirit of glory and of God rest upon you. On their part, those who seek to bring this to set, on their part, they're seeking to blaspheme him. But on your part, on your obedience, Christ, our Father, they are glorified.